Hello and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is someone who knows and loves movies. Gray Drake is a senior editor for Rotten Tomatoes. I've met her several times before. She's on Good Day LA a lot, sharing her thoughts on various films and theaters that weekend, but I really had no idea she'd done so many other things in her career. She's worked as a producer for reality TV shows like Women on Death Row, Women Who Kill, Extreme Makeover Home Edition, which she says made her cry on the regular. We talked about what it's like to be a movie reviewer. How much does she read about the film beforehand, and what's she looking for when she goes to see it? Some of the films that have been nominated for Oscars this year, and interviewing people like Gwyneth Paltrow, even her friendship with the great Mr. Samuel L. Jackson. She's witty and smart and just a very entertaining person in general. I would say if you like movies, this episode is definitely for you. So enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
So how was the show?
That we just did?
Yes.
Awesome. Fun. Because we got to talk about Black Panther, which I just could talk about for ages.
I haven't seen it. Loved it? You loved it?
It's so fun. It's such an interesting, unusual movie.
Really?
Yeah, it's unusual. It feels, it's, to me, it was like when I saw Avengers and I knew how much heavy lifting had to be done. Like, it's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
But they made it feel effortless. And so Black Panther does the same thing where it's really doing a lot, but you don't feel exhausted watching it.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. Did you just see it or did you watch it a while back?
No, I saw it a while back, actually. I saw it as soon as they started screening it, like the end of January. It's like a couple weeks ago, couple and a half.
How many screeners are you watching like in a week?
I see a lot of movies every week. I see at least two. And so that's the week where I feel like I'm practically on vacation when I see two movies. Usually it's more like four.
So when you, okay, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do a podcast with you, because honestly, I'll watch a movie, say I watch a movie one night and then I watch a movie the next night. I get them mixed up in my head. Like, how do you keep it all straight? I mean, obviously, this is like your profession, so you can keep them all straight, but do you know what I mean?
I'm laughing because I get it. I really do. I don't like, here's what I don't like. I don't like seeing more than one movie in a day, if I can help it. Because I feel like it's unfair to the last film, and I'm just so tired. Because I get, the way that I watch movies and the way that I think about movies is largely emotionally based, and it has to do with where I'm at. And so I can put it through several different filters, like one of them being my filmmaker filter and what was happening technically that I understand because I worked in the industry. Then I put it through the filter of my emotions and did I connect with this movie? But then there's also the important filters of, well, who did they make this movie for? Because sometimes it's not me. And especially when I am out in the public talking about my opinion, I think that it is, I'm allowed to have my response, but I'm also speaking to people that they made the movie for. So if I didn't like the first Thor movie very much. Like, let's just put it that way. So I'm not their target demo, right? So I have to look at the movie from a male aged 18 to 35's perspective as best I can and say, are those people going to like this movie? Because that's fair.
Yeah. So do you ever ask like a male age 18 to 35 what'd you think about
this? What did you think? Yeah. I definitely talk to people to get a sense of the sentiment around a movie.
Yeah.
And especially with social media, it's really easy to tell these days, kind of what's hot, what's not, because you can just tell that people are talking about it.
Yeah, it's just instantaneous. They can offer their opinion. When you're going to a screener, how much are you reading about movie reactions, like, for example, on social media or online or on Rotten Tomatoes before you watch it?
I try to know as little as humanly possible But that is not very realistic because so much of my job is talking about things in advance. So I'm talking about what are we excited about that's coming out at this film festival soon? And what do we want to talk about in the summer of 2018? And so I have to educate myself. And I dislike that part of it because when I'm watching a movie, it's so much easier for me to suspend disbelief and to enjoy it when I don't have expectations. And at this point, because I've been doing this job for a while, just knowing who's in a movie shapes my expectations to some extent. And for audiences, that's what marketing departments are depending on. You know, they want you to love The Rock, so you'll just go see what The Rock is in.
Right.
But for me, the reason that I get a real charge out of this is because of the surprise of movies and how hopeful I am that I'm going to come out of the theater being changed after I see something. And not every movie achieves that, but certainly there are even moments that I could point to in films where I'm like, that was memorable. Yeah. I loved this. And on 30 Rock, Tina Fey has a great joke about that where Jenna's in all these terrible plays, but since her best friend, she has to go. And the only thing she can compliment is stuff like, these programs are just made out of an amazing cardstock. And I feel like that's how I respond to movies a lot because I don't write official criticism for the tomato meter. I am only talking about my opinion in comparison to the tomato meter. And so I have no problem being positive as a general rule. If I hated something, there's still something that I could point to that people that were really wanting to see the movie want to know about.
Yeah.
Like if a Nicholas Sparks movie comes out, they've been messing those up left and right ever since The Notebook in tons of different ways. It's actually quite amazing. But they've never hit me full force like The Notebook did. So when I see those films, which is pretty challenging for me, I have to put on that cap of who is a Nicholas Sparks adaptation fan. You know, is it a female? Is it, what age is she? What other movies does she like? And how does this stack up against that? You know, I think the biggest thing that I try to do is be fair while still embracing my response to things and what makes me a fan in the first place.
I think that's super challenging.
It really is.
I mean,
but thank God I get paid to do this.
Yeah, definitely.
thank God.
Yeah, you get to watch movies. In your opinion, what's the best way to watch a movie? Is it going to the theater? Because I end up watching so many movies either A, on a plane,
yep,
or B, on like before bed, just in my room on the TV screen. That's not that great.
So it's a very personal question, meaning that it'll vary a lot from person to person. So as it applies to me, the best way is to see it in the theater, which is like annoying to me because I'm like, I have to like go to this screening and it's at night and I've already been at the office all day. Boo hoo. Yeah. But it's some days, you know. I love watching movies on planes because they have my rapt attention.
Yeah.
I am not focused on any other thing. The only downside is the size of the screen. I saw a lot of pictures on Twitter of people watching with captions, just the way he intended for this to be seen, an airplane screen of Dunkirk.
Oh, okay. So not going to lie. That's, I was going to tell you, that's literally where I watched Dunkirk.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what was interesting about that for me. I turned it on and on a plane and was not in the headspace.
Yeah.
So bored, turned it off, and I was ready to discount it completely. And then at Christmas, I had a screener copy, put it in the DVD player because some friends expressed interest. And I was in like such a zen holiday state, meaning drunk.
Yeah. Yes.
No, I was so relaxed that I paid very close attention to it, probably closer than I paid to attention than I paid to most films in the recent past. And I loved it.
Loved it.
I couldn't believe how much I loved it. Did you enjoy it after watching it on a plane?
I did. I first watched it on a screener.
Okay.
And I fell asleep.
Yes. Very easy.
Yeah. And I mean, nothing against the movie. It was just I was really tired. And then I watched it on the plane and I was way more into it because of the reason that you brought up. I had like undivided attention.
Right. I mean, if anything, you're trying to ignore everything else.
Yes, exactly. You just like, I'm so bored on this plane. Remind me that I'm not flying for 5 hours. I'm just going to zone in on this movie.
And in fact, I think airplane movies are their own genre. And I generally place them in that category if I found them to be completely awful in theaters. But I could definitely see loving it on an airplane.
Yeah.
Like a lot of stuff that Zac Efron does. I think he's so talented.
What was the movie I just watched?
The Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. My husband and I watched in sync on a plane in two different screens. And we were laughing so hard that the guy next to us thought that we were mental patients.
Wait, I don't think that's with Zac Efron and...
And Adam Devine?
Yeah. From Workaholics. Yeah. What is the one that I just watched with Cillian Murphy? It's a war movie. Anthropoid?
Oh, sure.
Have
I remember.
You seen that?
No, I didn't see that one. The title really creeped me out.
I was so into it that I was like, tears streaming down my face.
Wow.
Sad. Yeah.
See, so I think certain movies really, really, really work in that environment.
Yeah.
I also think that cable movies is a genre. Sometimes I can't wholeheartedly encourage people to spend their hard-earned money and their date night time watching a film, but I'll say like, but listen, when this comes on cable and you're trapped under something heavy and you can't change the channel, you're going to laugh at this.
Yeah.
It's like when the stakes are lowered, you are free to enjoy things in a new way. So when you're not paying $50 plus the price of dinner and snacks and your babysitter, you'll be a lot kinder to something when it's just streaming and you're in your gym jams.
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
A good point. Definitely.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of things. I watch a movie, and I love movies so much, and critics love movies so much. And anyone that says that critics hate movies, it does not know a critic.
Right.
It would be the worst job in the world if you hated movies and TV shows. And I love movies so much, and they've meant so much to me my whole life, that it's important to me to be fair while I'm being entertaining in talking about the movie. So it's like I think a lot about how I want to talk about something and how am I going to add to this conversation? Because now conversations are happening everywhere in great numbers. So my question to myself is always, why am I speaking?
Yes.
What am I adding?
Yeah. Interesting. And how closely are you paying attention to, because you said like from a filmmaker perspective, you're looking at that. How closely are you paying attention to, say, the music or just like visually the colors or?
I'm not much of a music person. I really appreciate it, but I don't have a really easy time naming scores.
Gotcha.
I really admire people that can do that. And I am so hardwired to look for cinematography because I am a former cinematographer. And I love those sweeping shots, or I can really appreciate the landscape in something. And I really get down with movies. Oh, like there was one that is available to stream on Hulu and it's called Columbus. Off everybody's radar, very small film, but John Cho is in it from Harold and Kumar and Star Trek. And it is such a stunningly beautiful film. I was so overwhelmed with the visual look of the film. I barely even really paid attention to the film, to be honest. I was just so taken by how this cinematographer chose to shoot the film. It's rare that I see something like that, but when I do, I get like pumped.
Wow.
Because it's... We see, you know, I see mostly wide releases, which are like mostly superhero movies. Mm-hmm. And That's fine, but I'm pretty bored at this point, and something has to really impress me or surprise me. And then I see a movie like Columbus, and I'm like, oh, God, this is different, and I want to talk about it. And I also love movies that start a conversation because I remember things that I really love and really hate. Like, gotcha. On the polar ends.
And everything in the middle, you're just kind
of
like,
I sort of usually forget it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember in broad strokes, that was cool, or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there's the stuff I really love or hate, and I love those movies because chances are other people feel similarly, and that's when it's interesting to me. When we could talk about Mother and just discuss that piece of work, that's what I live for.
Yeah.
It's like, when I walked out of that, I was like, oh my God, everyone is going to be so mad.
Really? I haven't seen it.
Oh my God. Paramount had barely any choice in how they marketed this weird movie. So they said it was a horror film. So they're like, oh my God, Jennifer Lawrence is in a horror film. Yay. It is not a horror film. I am a horror film lover, and it is not a horror film. And if I had been in film school watching Mother, I think that I would have died. Because there's so much there to look at, to pick apart, to analyze, to talk about. It's one of the most interesting movies I've seen in a long time, and I loved it, but I also love when people hated it.
Did overwhelmingly people hate it?
Yes.
Oh.
It had like an F cinema score.
Really?
Like, the critics loved it. It was like in the high 80s and certified fresh on the tomato meter. And it was, but it's fascinating to me because that's what I care about is when we disagree and how subjective this all is.
Yeah.
Why do you,
for example, this specific instance in Mother, why do you think that the critics tended to like this, but the general audience is like, what?
I think that happens I'll speak specifically to this movie. The movie itself was a wonder of technological skill, very well performed, really interesting script, and just very dissimilar to anything that had come out in 2017. And so some people probably liked it because they were being like, I'm such a smart film critic and I loved it. But I think that I think our critics responded because it was very memorable. It really stood out. And I see, especially this time of year, it's a very quiet time of year. And most of what I see is just fine. It's just fine.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I wasted my time, and I will forget that I saw that tomorrow. Do you know that at one time, in the fall, also kind of a dead time for movies, I was desperately trying to find a screening to American Assassin, which was like a Michael Keaton and like Dylan O'Brien from The Maze Runner. I was trying and trying and trying to find the information on a screening, and then I realized I had already seen it.
Stop.
It's the only time that's ever happened.
And I was like, oh shoot, wait, I have seen this.
I was horrified because it was so forgettable. And I was so bummed out because, you know, Dylan O'Brien has really captured the affection of all of these teen female fans, and he's so popular. And I'm like rooting for him because I don't love the Maze Runner movies either, but it's like, no, this kid is like interesting.
Yeah.
If they'll let him be interesting. And that was like their attempt to make him interesting. And what was hilarious to me when I really like thought about the movie and rewatched the trailer and was like, oh yeah, I definitely did see this. He was in the movie with Taylor Kitsch. And Taylor Kitsch is one of those guys who is such a good actor. He is so talented and he's so interesting and just is in a whole bunch of duds. He was in Friday Night Lights to great acclaim, and then he went on to do what, by all accounts, should have been a gigantic hit in John Carter of Mars. But they killed the of Mars when they released the movie. But that should have been a hit. Lone Survivor. I mean, that was very popular, but nobody talked about him. And like everything that this guy does, he's always so good and no one ever talks about him. And so fingers crossed, because he's going to be in Waco coming up, I believe a miniseries. And so we're really going to get time to spend with him again in the TV world, I'm pretty sure. And it's like Michael Shannon's in it, and it's about David Koresh, and he's, and you know, Taylor Kitsch is David Koresh. So I'm like, dude, this is going to be great. And I find myself doing that a lot. Like, I'm cheering people on from the sidelines, and I get like, I understand fandom when they get really caught up in stuff, because I get really caught up in stuff, and I'm rooting for these people. And when I actually have the opportunity to speak to them and interview them, I have to remind myself that this is a one-sided relationship.
Right.
Like, they do not know me. And I have to, like, dial it down a little bit, because it's very hard for these people to ever live up to the expectations that you have as a very emotionally engaged fan.
Yes. Oh, I've often gone down the rabbit hole on certain people, like, just... just YouTubing random interviews they've done after Anthropoid. That's when I started researching Cillian Murphy.
Oh,
and he's in Peaky Blinders, which I love.
He was Scarecrow in Batman Begins.
Yeah, I mean, he's done so much
stuff. He's everywhere.
Yeah, he was in Dunkirk.
Yes.
Yeah, he's amazing. Been in so much stuff. Yes, to the point that it becomes a little bit obsessive. You know, speaking of that, actually, Dylan O'Brien, my boss here, Patrick O'Brien, has a decent amount of social media followers who think that he is Dylan's dad.
I love social media.
Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Oh, my God. That's so awesome. Yeah. You should really work it, like, for all it's worth.
I know. I'm hoping one day that Dylan O'Brien will come on Good Daily for that reason, so they can take a photo together and Patrick can say, like, oh, I'm so proud of my son.
Go crazy.
Yeah. Yes. Correct. And did you used to work? You've done a lot of various jobs.
I have, the entertainment world. Yeah,
like casting.
Yes,
producer.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Did you go to school for film?
Yes. I went to University of Texas in Austin, Hook'em. I'm a Longhorn, and I was in their film program, and I have made lots of small films, short films. My crowning achievement in that world is my 22-minute musical that was my senior thesis film that is called Stupid in Love. And it's come up a lot recently to the point where I'm like, I'm going to put this online, because it was a huge leap of faith for me. It was a lot of work. It was such an amazing creative process. I loved it. I loved working with my co-director, who I was also dating at the time. Hi, Mel Cowan.
Hey, Mel.
And I loved every second of it, and I returned to it all these years later as being one of the things I would never change. Wow. Even with all of its cute faults or limitations, I still really love it. And it's a miracle that these things get done in any form. It's a miracle that a short film is made. It's a miracle that people are able to produce a piece of media that they upload to YouTube off their phones. That's it's a beautiful, amazing gift that we have in this world. And that's the other reason that this job really means something to me, because when I'm sitting in that theater, when I'm sitting on a plane, or when I'm sitting in my jammies on my couch, I'm thinking about all of these people's lives that were dedicated to this. And it's, you know, it makes a movie that doesn't reach me very sad to me. But the flip side is also true. When I just love something, it makes me even happier, because I think, God, what a cool thing to, like, be involved in that.
Yeah. And sometimes it can take a decade.
Oh, my God. It's such a long process, and I don't know how they do it. And I transitioned out of school. I really was focused on cinematography, and I did that for a while, but I also really love editing. My brain loves taking unrelated pieces and turning it into a new whole. And so I've edited a lot, and I worked in reality TV for a long time. So I was doing...
Did you do something with, like, Women Who Kill, or I read that?
Yeah. A lot of women on death row, and, like,
those are my favorite shows.
Boy, are those tough jobs, because, oh, yeah. My job on that show was to... We're looking at cases that we're going to talk about on the show. I had to research every element, every person involved, every detail, you know, come up with how we were going to produce the segment, but then also speak to the people involved. So I had to find these people and I had to talk to them and introduce myself as like, hi, I am a completely random reality TV producer who is calling you and probably dredging up the most painful thing that exists in your life. But what's odd about my involvement in that is that it was exactly like what I did when I was in the casting department at Extreme Makeover Home Edition. So I worked on a couple seasons of that show where we were building a new house in all 50 states, which was like it was a great kind of ratings grabbing move for them. And this was the show where Ty Pennington would help rebuild a house in 7 days for a needy family. And so in the casting department, I would meet all of the families we were considering, only one of which got a house, and would travel the country, walk into a stranger's house, sit down with a camera, and go, okay, so your son has this horrible, life-crushing disease that somehow you have turned into a positive. Go. And, like, we would talk about this stuff. And so it was always a big balance for me because I felt that, I mean, all reality TV is very produced and very exploitative. So the only way that I could justify my participation in it spiritually is that on the Extreme Makeover Home Edition show, we were exploiting them for a good end.
Right. They were getting a new house.
We were changing their lives. And even though there are some newsworthy examples of how it didn't work out in the long term for some families, the majority of families have actually really been able to take what ABC gave them and really do so much more good in the world, which is amazing. And that's that was the big thing about that show. These people were unbelievable in every case. They were facing some kind of horrible, some very, very intense adversity. And then they were still helping people. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter that they had hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills and of a father that couldn't carry his son into his bedroom at night. And it didn't matter. They were still coaches of a special ed baseball team that people would come from all over the state to participate in. Like, it was incredible. And I cried so much, like all the time. And prior to having that job, I had a real issue with crying in front of people. No problems when you cry in front of Grey Drake. Grey Drake does not like crying in front of other people. And I immediately switch into third person because even thinking about it makes me uncomfortable. I cried every day. I cried all the time. And I would go home with the footage and I would edit the videos and that was what we would pitch to the network, and they would pick who got a house.
They would pick who got the house.
And so my career in reality TV has consisted of connecting with people and, you know, basically like handling awkward situations with as much grace as possible, hopefully for some kind of good end. You know, and on the Women on Death Row show, it's a lot harder to find the positives in that, but it also was an opportunity to give everyone a chance to speak and be heard. And some people were not into it, but the majority of people decided to participate because they did want their side represented. And what is funny is that I came from that and now do that working for Rotten Tomatoes when I do interviews with talent. Because all I care about is making a connection with these people that gives someone in the viewing audience like just a smile.
Yeah.
Just the sense that even though there are people out there that have extraordinary jobs and they're so glamorous and they're so fancy and amazing, we're all just a bunch of dummies. And you know, the fact that maybe for this small amount of time that I sit down with these people that we could have a moment that feels human that I've shared with someone who is not glitzy, glamorous, famous, that's meaningful to me. That's what I care about. And so it's over the years, as I've seen how all of these weird jobs have kind of contributed to what I do now, the real theme of it is connection, is just talking to people. I just love people. Yeah. I love, and movies has been an amazing way for me to transition into getting to connect with people for a job.
Totally. And totally. When, how did you end up, were you with Fandango next after that? Or how did you end up getting with Rotten Tomatoes?
I was producing Ancient Aliens on the History Channel. That wasn't so much
you
about...
You have a great resume.
It's so weird. I love LA. Yeah. So I was working on Ancient Aliens and I got a call. I had been hosting a podcast. And I started this podcast with my best friend and we just talked about movies. And we had guests in. That was all it was. And people started recognizing us at Comic-Con. Yeah.
Okay.
San Diego Comic-Con, the big one.
Yeah. That's...
And we were like, oh my God, people are listening. And so over the years, I kept the flame of the podcast going. And it was just my hobby. I just did it on the side. And movies.com called. And they were like, oh, we need a new critic. Do you write? And I was like, well, I mean, if you're asking if I'm literate, then yes. but yeah, I write also, but my passion is really more in like video content. Mm-hmm. And so they were like, yeah. You're hired. Now you get to watch movies for a living. And I was like, I should just do this.
Okay.
So I was like producing the Women on Death Row show and I was writing the reviews and I was kind of getting more entrenched in this world. And then very quickly after I started, CNN called Fandango. Now, Fandango and movies.com are the same company. And so the CNN called Fandango and they were like, ring, ring. And they were like, hi, it's Fandango. They were like, it's CNN. We need a movie critic. Do you have anybody? And they were like, well, we just hired this like random pink-haired girl. So I went on CNN, which was such an unbelievably Twilight Zone experience.
Was that your first time on TV and like live TV?
Oh, yeah. I had like previously been featured on local news broadcasts attending a Rockies game at the ballpark. And I was like, oh my God, I've got to like make this work somehow. And I get into CNN and the Sunset Bureau here in Los Angeles, like, they just sit you in a room with a camera that doesn't even have an operator. It's a robo camera. And it's beautifully lit, so you don't even have to do your makeup well to look good. Thank God.
Yeah.
And I talked about a Liam Neeson movie that he did with January Jones that took place in Berlin. And I do not remember the title of said movie. I just remember that Berlin was the most interesting character in the film. And so I gave my review on CNN and my mom was watching, you know, like it was like I told people to tune in for this. And like the anchor like didn't openly despise me. And so I was like, wow, that was an amazing time that I will only have one of. So I hope you enjoyed it, Gray. Go home and just keep doing how you do. They called me back. And I worked with them for 3 years. And this great anchor that I worked with, I started to learn pretty quickly that the way that I was used to talking about films was not normal. And so it's like, when I talk about Liam Neeson, I'm likely to just refer to him as Schindler. It's
gotcha.
Little things.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I want the fans to have a voice. I'm a fan. I don't want to sit there because I mean anybody could come on, and the week's releases include this movie with Judi Dench, who you don't know, and it's like, so
when in reality a lot of people connect Liam Neeson with that character.
Well, right, it's like I just want to make it interesting, and I'm a smart aleck, so it's like okay, so. The anchor, she never knew quite what to make of me, Frederica Whitfield, and she's so great, still on CNN. And I just have so much footage of her, just like any variation of, oh, Michael Gray, you're crazy.
You should just do a mashup of that. Like,
it's so funny. And I can tell, like, when you're doing live TV that the anchors have so much going on in their ear. They've got a million things that they're managing, and they're not always listening.
Yeah. They're like, fine. It's like half listening.
They're almost half listening, and there's a cadence that they're looking for, and they're waiting for you to just wind down your sentence, and you have to give them those cues as a good guest, and it's hard to do. Except that I know now, when I pull something and the anchor hasn't been listening, I know. I see the look in their eyes because they know. They see my face and they get that vibe from me that I just was naughty, but they don't know what I said or they didn't understand it. And then they'll always go, absolutely.
Dude, that is spot on.
It's not. And it's never my goal to come into somebody else's house and make them look bad, ever. It just happens sometimes on accident. And I've been really lucky to work with such great professionals that they can gloss over the absolutely and move on. Mm-hmm. But I just get like a secret giggle out of it.
That is such an art. Honestly, I mean, as far as like when you're watching, say, an anchor of a live news show, for example, if you're watching someone and they're not obviously like distracted or like when it just seems like they're delivering normal news and they don't let on that they're being talked to in their ear and they have like tease music in their other ear, like wrap it up. And you don't get that. Like that is a true professional because there's so much going on.
Absolutely. There's so much. It's such a skill. It's so difficult. Yeah. It's a beauty to behold. That's kind of what I love about knowing so much about behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
I just love that stuff because it's amazing, the skill level.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I didn't realize that you edit and did a lot of those things. And because I feel like that really helps in critiquing a movie or like, you know, giving an opinion on a movie.
No question. I mean, because I've been there and I certainly haven't been there in the capacity of a feature film editor. I've edited a feature, but I don't know that I edited a feature. Yeah. But I get it. I definitely am a step closer to understanding their plight and their triumph than someone who doesn't have that experience, certainly.
Yeah.
And it's... You know, it's just relating to a movie.
Yeah.
It's relating. And it's those things really help me relate. And the good news is that once it became apparent that I could do on-camera stuff and not, like, completely embarrass myself and my parent company, then I was sent out to do interviews, which I could produce and then edit.
Yeah.
And then I cut all the dumb stuff out when I would mess up.
Yeah.
Because I remember, oh my God, like one of my first junkets, you know, where you've got movie stars sitting in a hotel room in a lighting setup with two cameras rolling and just journalists coming in and out in the increment of 4 minutes. Boom, 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 all day long. Nightmare for them. Sucks. And so, I mean, it's like pretty cush for the journalists, because it's like you have free food all day long, a nice hotel, climate controlled, hopefully. Yeah. Maybe you're in an exotic location that has been paid for by the movie studio. But my very first one was Carol Burnett and Amy Poehler, who were the voices in an animated film called The Secret Life of Arrietty. So I'm a little overwhelmed because Carol Burnett.
Hi, Carol.
Right? And I'm like, mom, I'm going to talk to Carol Burnett. She's like, yeah. Like, I know if my mom gets excited about somebody, then they're famous. Mm-hmm. Right? Freaked out about Carol Burnett. She's like, Gray, you got to tug your ear. You have to do it. I'm like, mom, but everybody does that to Carol Burnett. She's like, I don't care, Gray.
Do it.
If you love me, you'll do it. So I remember walking into the room and I was petrified and I barely knew how it went and like, oh, I was horrible. And they were so warm, so kind to me. And Carol Burnett told me I looked like Julianne Moore.
Did she?
She did. And I was like completely overwhelmed and I like barely asked good questions.
Did you go into that with prepared questions?
Yes. Oh. I always, my personality requires that I prepare.
Yeah.
just so I can throw it all out when I get there, because I love the unexpected. I live for that. I'll come from an improv background, and that is connection, is what you can't plan. And you are more than welcome to walk into this room with someone who's probably like pretty tired and super famous and fancy. And you are welcome to have an agenda. And you are, if you want to get blazed through that agenda, like the hell with what they want, then go right ahead. They're going to play ball most of the time. But if you can read the room, I mean, and this is like applies to life as well. If you can read the room and figure out what that person needs in that moment, you're going to have a much better experience. Because if you have the ability to like be vulnerable and let go of what you think is going to yield great results for you, then you've given that other person the opportunity to bring their delightful surprises to you. Because you wouldn't, the crazy stuff that's happened to me only happened because I was just in it. I wasn't in my head. I wasn't thinking about what I had to accomplish. I just saw what was in front of me and worked with that. And you have to be willing to fail. You have to be, you can't have a huge attachment to success at any cost. It's a very dangerous, it's a very useful personality trait, but I think it's also very dangerous when you're trying to talk to other people, because it's, we know this about each other. We sense it. You just get a vibe from someone. And people are like, how do you get away with saying this stuff to people? It's like, listen, A, I don't know. But B, I'm there in the service of the movie or the TV show. I'm never going to make someone look bad. That's not my thing. I don't like it. I want everyone to be safe. But I also don't care about the stuff that everybody else cares about. So when I talked to Gwyneth Paltrow for Iron Man 3, her character was so cool in, or two? Two. It was two. Iron Man 2. Her character was so cool. Or was it three? Which one is the one with the Mandarin? They all blend together. Oh, God. It's three because two is terrible. Okay. Got it.
I was gonna say, I haven't seen three.
We've righted the ship. Okay. It was important. So she was awesome in that movie. And I got a chance to sit down with her and I was like, oh, my God, Gwyneth Paltrow is going to be so fancy. She's like not going to get me. But I walk in and I have a T-shirt on that has a glowing chest plate like Iron Man's. You know, I forget what they're called. And I have my favorite sneakers on, which are Converse high tops with black sequins.
Love it.
And I'm feeling in my element. I feel like I've got my power eyeshadow on and I'm like ready to talk to Gwyneth Paltrow because I love her and I've loved her forever. And I tried very desperately not to pay attention to things that she says in her private life. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So she's so cool in that movie. But I sat down and I was like, she goes, oh my God. She's like waving her hands around and she's like, stop everything. Who are you? What is all this magnificence going on? You are banging. And so immediately I'm just so tickled. But she's so much cooler than I had anticipated because I had that preconceived notion and I had allowed it to seep into my brain. And so I was like, okay, first of all, the shirt. She's like, I have to buy them for my kids. They're going to flip out. And I was like, here's where you get them. And she's yelling to her assistant. She's like, did you hear that? She's like, tell me about
that.
Right. She's like, tell me about the shoes. And I was like, not produced anymore. Very creepy, Skechers Offset, and the name of the shoes is Daddy's Money.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Love it.
So she's like, okay, that makes me uncomfortable. Let's move on. And I was like, so I had a whole thing. But I just was like, out of nowhere, was like, okay, Gwyneth. Except I can never call people by their first names only because it's too familiar. So I always call them by their full names because it feels awkward and therefore more me because I'm a pretty awkward person. So I was like, okay, Gwyneth Paltrow, tell me how many of the Iron Man shenanigans you think over three movies could have been completely avoided if the characters had been eating gluten-free.
That's amazing.
And I was like, oh my God, why did that come out of my mouth? Like, sometimes I say things and I'm like, what are you saying? And she, thank God, she laughed and she was like, listen, Robert is already gluten-free, so that just takes that out of the equation. And she's like, but I know what you're talking about. And I was like, right, because here's Guy Pearce and always this scientist. And she's like, right, late nights in the lab eating Cheez-Its. And so I was like, wow, I had no idea that this would go like this. And I have really come to love facing every day with this sense of what is going to delight me today that I never could have anticipated. And the only way to bring that out of people, or the only way to experience that, is to truly make yourself this blank slate. And that, which isn't to say that I'm the most zen individual, because I certainly am anxious and I have a lot of work to do and I want to be good and I want to perform and I, you know, I have all these desires. But at the same time, if you can just find that zone when you're talking to someone or when you're taking a minute out in the courtyard or when you're in line at the grocery store, and it's everywhere. And I love that somehow this desire of mine has been coupled with my love of movies and TV. I can't believe that I figured out a way to make these two things match. It's like, what kind of blessed life is this? Like, I am hashtag blessed. And it is so obnoxious to say that. And I just love it. And I love seeing people's response to it in that environment, because I don't think it's the norm. And I've actually formed, most people are just friendly. Like, I'm not allowed to call someone my friend until their number's in my cell phone. Mm-hmm. That's when they're my friend. But most people are very friendly. And some people are so friendly that I consider them outer solar system friends. Do you know what I mean? Like outer orbit friends, where they're not people that I call when I have a day off and I want to go to lunch. But when I see them, we hug so hard and they read my wedding vows, which is the story of me and Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh.
What? He threatens my husband all the time that if he ever messes with me.
Wait, were you writing them and then you came across him at a red carpet or something?
I have a long history of ridiculousness with this man. And I love him so much, and he's such a huge part of my movie culture. And the first time I met him was at Comic-Con, and I was dressed like the Lady Riddler, and he was so into it, and we took all these photos, and he followed me on Twitter. And he's the one I talk about the most, because I thought he would be one way, and he's not that way. Mm-hmm. He's not who he plays. He's just a really good actor. He's such a warm, smart, surprising individual with so much depth that it's he's always delighting me. And so it's over the years, so many things. And he yells at Comic-Con, he's like, ladies and gentlemen, seasoned journalist Gray Drake, yelling it in the lobby of the Hilton Hotel. And hugs, and he'll threatens people with bodily harm if they don't hug me hello, if he his co-stars. Aww. And so when I was getting married, I was like, oh my god, I can't say these vows without crying, and I really want to try and limit the amount of crying that I do,
because you didn't like crying in front of people.
I've gotten a lot more comfortable with it since my Extreme Makeover days.
Oh, right, okay.
But I it's I just didn't want to go there, because it was so, I just cry so hard. Not on the wedding day. You know what I mean? Come on.
Mess
so,
up the makeup.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. And I'm not a pretty crier, you guys. It's horrible. So I thought, who would I get to read? What can I do that's kind of funny? Because my husband's so funny. And what would he appreciate? And I was like, oh my god, Sam. Oof. So I told Sam I was getting married, and he was like,
eye roll.
And he's like, listen, he goes, if I see you in 2 more months and you are not just overjoyed and so happy with this marriage, he's like, I'm going to kick his ass. And I'm like, I'll tell him that you said that. And so I said, well, you could give us a wedding present. And he's like, what? And he always pretends that he doesn't want to do what I want him to do. And then he doesn't. And I said, well, I just want someone who gets me to read these. So I had written them out, and he read them word for word, and he, like, said all his classic catchphrases, which I'm not sure that I'm allowed to say because of explicit rules on this podcast. And so it was amazing. And so every time that I see him now, he's like, did he like his wedding present? And like, are you still married to that? Beep, beep. It's so great. And I like, what an amazing thing. I point at the Capital One commercials and I'm like, you see that guy, honey? Don't mess with me. He's going to come after you.
Yeah. I think that's such a good point. Just the whole point about going into a situation, like when you were saying earlier about with Gwyneth too, like having, you had these ideas in your mind about her and then she ended up being pretty cool.
Yes.
Like going into any situation like that is such a good way to think about anyone. Like even if you're going for a job interview, if you're just like even approaching, I do it a lot with like your bosses or just anyone who you might be intimidated by or yeah. You know,
people surprise you all the time. And we, our brains, I think they want to sort people so we understand them better. It's a shortcut. Yeah. And I think when you are able to become conscious of that process for you and you're able to take people out of the category that you just put them in, they'll surprise you every time.
Yeah.
You'll find something that will surprise you. And to me, that's what this is, life. It's that surprise. It's being able to find those surprises because life is tough. It's sad. It's a lot of bad things just alongside the good. And what is happiness? And to me, it's surprise. Because I'm so tickled when I see, oh my God, I'll tell you a great example of walking down the street in San Diego at the Comic-Con dressed like Tinkerbell and it's late at night. And a big guy steps out onto a street that is very uncrowded, steps in front of us. And I'm with a girlfriend, not confident I can take this guy or even run away. And so my alarms go off. And as we get closer, I'm kind of looking at him like, what's his deal? And he was like, excuse me, Tinkerbell, I'm a huge fan.
Yes.
It turns out that he owns a tattoo shop down there in the gas lamp. And he's like a terrifying looking dude. He loves Tinkerbell and he loves sharing it with his daughter. And so I came into the shop and he has photos of us in his shop now. And I was like, so not all stories with two girls walking down a dark street end as delightfully as that one. But my God. How great that I was, you know, it's how lucky.
Yeah, that reminds me. I mean, just people have a lot of layers to them, too. You know, when you think even like coworkers or people you're always around, you think one way about them and then they'll do something that sort of surprises you. And then you suddenly see them in this new way and you're like, oh, yeah. Which actually reminded me of that was the whole thing that I thought when I was watching I, Tonya.
That's funny. I was just going to say I, Tonya.
I didn't know the story at the time because I was like, I just wasn't old enough to be paying attention to it. So when I started watching that movie, I didn't know. I had heard that they had some type of, I knew the names. I knew that there was something there, but I didn't know the story.
Sure. I had like a slightly similar relationship to it because I knew what was happening. I just didn't pay that close of attention. And so I knew the story, but I didn't know the story.
Yeah. Because I was watching Margot Robbie do an interview about how, because I think she's fairly young. She's maybe 24, 25 or something. So she didn't know either the story until she started taking on the role. And she was saying how a lot of people even now were like, oh, yeah, I remember Tonya. She just walked right up with a baseball bat and hit her in the knee. Like people in their mind still thought that.
Sure.
And so watching the movie and then afterwards, I kind of started Googling Tonya Harding and all the things that happened. And it just reminded me of like, yeah, there's a lot of layers to people, you know?
Definitely. And I think that movie does a great job of showing exactly how crazy an event like that is. Because everyone's recollections are different and the memory is a terrible thing to go off of. And any defense, you know, any attorney will tell you that. And so people's memory is the worst. You never really know someone. Everyone has a very rich inner life, even if they're boring.
Yeah.
There's still something. And that movie manages all of that stuff really well. I've seen it 3 times, actually.
Really?
And I just love it. I think it's so good. And I think she's so good. And I also am a huge Sebastian Stan fan because he's Winter Soldier. And I've always found him like, he's a very interesting actor to me because I find him increasingly interesting over the years. Like, he started super boring. He was in Gossip Girl and I was like, whatever.
Was he?
Yeah. And I was like, he would come on every once in a while. He's okay. Not like a regular, but then he was like, okay, showed up in Captain America. Okay. Yeah. But he's every single time I'm like, ooh, there's like more here than I thought. And then I see him as Jeff Gillooly and I was so impressed. And he's also in person, he's such a warm person and so normal that I also just makes me like root for him even more. And it made me really sad that that movie wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, it was just, was Margot nominated?
Mm-hmm.
And then Allison?
Oh, no. No, it's Allison Janney.
Just Allison Janney.
Yeah, I think so, actually. And so it, yeah, and it's, Margot Robbie was nominated for a Golden Globe, I know that.
Oh, right.
And so, yeah, and so it's, the Academy season is always frustrating like that. Because it's like, yeah, these movies deserve recognition.
Yeah.
But then there are others, you know, I mean, Columbus didn't get a cinematography nomination. So that's a bummer.
Right.
But then when you're a person that talks about it for a living, you know, I know that Roger Deakins shot Blade Runner 2049 and he has been he's like the Susan Lucci of the Academy Awards. He's been nominated like 13 times and he's never won. And he's such an amazing cinematographer. He's contributed so much to cinema, to our eye holes.
Yeah.
That, I mean, he really deserves it. But simultaneously, that category has the first female nominee ever.
This year?
For Mudbound.
That's on Netflix, isn't it?
It is.
I got to watch that.
Yeah.
I saw
it's
that.
Great. I love all the streaming stuff that actually brings this stuff to people's living rooms to make it accessible.
I feel like we were talking about that on the way up here. There's a lot of movies that are nominated and then they win. And then you're like, how do I watch this? And this year I have noticed that a couple of them are on Netflix, like Get Out. I was able to watch on demand on HBO,
Yay.
You know, some of those things.
Yes.
That make it a little bit easier.
Right. It's happening. It's shifting. And the movie industry really has a lot to figure out.
Yeah.
And these are all really positive conversations. With as emotionally trying as I find these times, I'm happy that it's going on. Mm-hmm. Because when we come out on the other side of it, we're going to be a lot closer to where we need to be. Because, you know, with something as frivolous as just the Academy rules of a movie having to screen for 1 week in either LA or New York to qualify, it's like, that's kind of nonsense.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, that's how they, like, that's the qualification.
It has to be showing for a week in both New York and L.A.?
Either or, I think.
Oh.
And it's you know, that's the ballpark. That's all it is. And so...
Nowhere in the middle.
And just big markets. Just the two big markets. And it's like, how snobby is that? But then also, you've got... But what that results in is an enormous group of people that have not seen the movie. They have no relationship to it. So of course they don't care about the Academy Awards. Of course. Like, no brainer, guys. Like, you need to change this strategy to include people if you care about the ratings being good and the ceremony continuing, basically. Because, I mean, does a Hollywood mogul care about people watching the Academy Awards? Probably no. but they would if they were smart.
Right. Totally. I didn't realize until I moved here, I didn't realize that you had to, like, how the membership of the academy works.
Yeah, I'm still a little murky on it.
Yeah, I've sort of off and on read things about it to where there's, like, different branches of membership. Some are, like, past nominees and winners of Oscars. Some are, like, it's all across the board.
They get invited, yeah.
Yeah, but it's very vague. Like,
by design, I think.
Yeah, it's confusing.
It's so confusing. Don't even get me started on how you have to have, like, a math degree to understand how Best Picture nominees work.
Yeah.
Jiminy Christmas. I have no idea how that works. I read and read and read, and I watch a YouTube video, and I ask somebody, and I go back to the article. I still don't get it.
Yeah, they're just these, like, anonymous people. Sort of.
The numbers thing of it is very strange. Why they sometimes don't have 10 nominees. And it's like, guys, could you just have 10?
Can we just make it even?
Yeah, it's like, is it really?
Can we also quickly, do you have to get out of here? Relatively. Do you have to be anywhere?
No.
I don't want to make sure. Because I also want to talk about, I watched Darkest Hour pretty soon after Dunkirk and realized it's like complimenting each other.
Yeah, definitely. It's like this, it's two different sides of the same thing.
Yeah.
Which I think is so cool.
It's super cool. It actually reminded me of, this is going to sound weird, but I feel like Ants and A Bug's Life came out around the same time.
They did. Just like Volcano and Dante's Peak. You know how studios always do that.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, a Volcano movie's in development.
Yeah, I'm like, do you think that that is a purposeful move sometimes? Like with Dunkirk and Darkest Hour, or is that just coincidence?
I think that it's just coincidence.
That's crazy because...
But I've never specifically asked anyone. I can't imagine. Let's see. Because Focus Features released Darkest Hour, but they're an NBC company, and then Dunkirk was Paramount. Nope, Warner Brothers, excuse me. So those two companies, I doubt that they play that nicely with each other.
Yeah.
I think it was just a coincidence. And I saw Dunkirk... So I saw Dunkirk with my friends on that screener finally. And then the word on the street was, now that movie is certified fresh on the tomato meter, but what critics are saying is always important. I always tell people to read the quotes for God's sake. Gives you context.
Right.
They were saying the movie's pretty boring. Gary Oldman, amazing. Movie kind of boring.
For Darkest Hour.
The story of Winston Churchill in the early days of World War II and dealing with Hitler, and he just became prime minister and all that. And I could not disagree more. I thought it was captivating. And I gave my husband an out. I was like, listen, we're going to watch 30 minutes. And if we hate this, then we're going to turn it off. And I'll just finish it later. 2 hours flies by. Nobody said a word. We both were like, wow.
Yeah.
I just thought it was great. And I'm not even like a historical war drama person. And I really like those movies.
Did you know much about Winston Churchill or just that time when England was like, oh no, they're moving in. We're screwed.
I feel like I know probably just a hair more about Winston Churchill than the average person. However, I'm still largely ignorant to overseas history.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's... And like war stuff, it's like I know it in broad strokes, and I knew things about like his tenure as prime minister. Is that what you call it? Tenure? I don't know. His time as prime minister, I knew things about that. I knew about his speeches, and he was an amazing speaker, and some of the content of his speeches and stuff like that. But I didn't, you know, the movie is interesting enough and surprising enough that Gary Oldman's incredible performance is really breathes new life into the whole thing.
Yeah, I've never watched him in any interviews, like just on his own, and now I want to because the way that he speaks in Darkest Hour, I'm like, how does he sound in real life? I mean,
it's not like that.
Yeah, I'm like, he's so good.
No, he's acting. That's what surprises me. I'm like, oh my God, these people are acting. Yeah. I forget. Yeah. No, Gary Oldman is delightful. He is so smart and funny and dry. He is not scared. He does not care what he says. And I really love that because we always end up having the most bananas conversations. I think he is so full of life. I really understand. But what's interesting is that He seems like a born performer to me, but he has such a rich personality himself that it surprises me that he's so good at taking on other personalities. Because he's so full of character and he's so fun. And he's been turning in decades of incredible work, like cinema-changing work. And he's never gotten an award.
Was he nominated?
I don't think he was nominated for Best Actor this year. And he's going to win it. That's for sure. Like, mark that down on your Oscar ballot for sure. Because he's won everything else. It would be a gigantic upset if he all of a sudden didn't win the Academy Award. That would be crazy.
Is there any movies or people that you feel should have been nominated that weren't?
Yeah, I was really disappointed that Blade Runner 2049 only got 5 technical nominations. I thought that the movie... I'm not surprised that, like, people thought it was boring. I get it. But I think that similarly to Blade Runner, I think that people will appreciate that movie in 30 years. Mm. And I had it hit me so hard. And when I try to pick it apart and really examine why it hit me that way, I can't really, because it's like just another noir movie. Just like Blade Runner. It's like there are exceptional things about it, but it's not that complicated. But why did it hit me like a ton of bricks? I still don't really know. I can't articulate it, but I'll tell you that it was another one of my most memorable experiences this year. Hmm. The baby goose, Ryan Gosling. We love him.
He is something.
One time I gave him a dish towel with his face on it.
Did he like it?
You have to Google this. You have to look it up.
Ryan Gosling eating cereal is my favorite.
It's amazing. He's so funny. His personality is why people treat him like this. Because he's so, like, cautious/withholding. Mm-hmm. It just makes him that much more interesting. Mm-hmm. He's like, you never feel like you fully have Ryan Gosling. And I was doing an interview with him for Gangster Squad that was going terribly. Like, he just didn't want to talk about anything I wanted to talk about. But he wasn't being mean. And I happened to bring along a dish towel that had his face on it. And what resulted is one of my favorite moments in my whole career. You can YouTube Ryan Gosling gets embarrassed by a dish towel. And I just love him so much. And he still has it, he says.
Does he?
He says. And Another one that you can look up on YouTube as far as an example of what I was talking about earlier of just dealing with what's in front of you. At Comic-Con, I did an interview with the cast of Let's Be Cops for Rotten Tomatoes. So that was Keegan-Michael Key and Rob Riggle and Damon Wayans Jr. And coming into the interview, they were carrying a lot of emotional baggage around that was not going to be great. But boy, was that interview something special. It was like the room was on fire. And that's one of the greatest privileges of this, mm-hmm. is that these people who are so talented in their field, Keegan-Michael Key is one of my favorite performers. He's so smart. He's so funny. To have these people invite you into their world and to trust you with that is one of the greatest joys, I think, of my life. Moments like that. It's truly special to me.
Yeah. Really, I can't memorable. Imagine.
So look that one up. It's like, you're like, what?
I definitely will. Speaking of also, do you know Lucas Hedges? He was in Manchester by the Sea. And
oh,
he was
sure.
also in Lady Bird.
Yes.
And 3 Billboards.
Oh my God, you're right.
I didn't realize it at first, and
he's
saw
like the Timothy Chalamet. He's of America.
But he's like having a year. I feel like, because I watched Lady Bird and 3 Billboards close together, mm-hmm. which was bad because then I mix up the two.
oh Jesus.
Yeah, which because they're very different. But oof. Anyways, I watched 3 Billboards after, and I saw him because he's Mildred's son. He's mm-hmm, like the mm-hmm. son in it. like, man, that kid looks familiar. And then I realized, oh, holy cow, he was just in Lady Bird.
Right.
It's like,
he's great.
It strikes me as like really funny when people just end up picking these like just bangers back to back to back.
I know, right? It's so same with Timothée Chalamet, because he's in Call Me By Your Name most notably, but he's also in Lady Bird too, as well. He's the French kid.
Oh.
But he's also, I think he's also in Dunkirk too. Is he? Like for a hot second, or either that or Hostels. I can't remember. But he's everywhere also. So half of me, Timothy is American, by the way. And I said that Lucas Hedges is the Timothy of America, but Timothy's mother is French. So that's why I said that, just to be clear, because I don't want to get tweets. part of me is like, yay. Love supporting these really great new talents. The other part of me is like, hey, casting people, there are plenty of great young, teen, male, brown-haired, white guys, if that's who you're going to cast in this role. And then on top of that, there are also guys that don't look like him who are also really good at this. Let's look harder.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
and so I'm a little bit, yes. I'm happy for their success because I think they're very good. I think we'll be talking about both of those guys for quite a while.
Yeah.
But then it's like, right, but then you give a chance to a kid like the Blue Ranger, RJ Sickler from Power Rangers. And he was in Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. I don't know where he came from, but just he was like, in Me and Earl, which is a great rental, and I was like, oh my God, I love this kid. And then I see that he's the Blue Ranger and the Power Rangers, and I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing.
This is RJ.
Right? It's so cool. And like, because I learned how to say his name. Let's put it that way. Because his name looks like RJ Cycler. And I was like, oh, cool, it's RJ Cycler. Nope. Learn it. Because you're going to be using it for many years to come. And I always am like, yes, what a triumph. For that casting department. Like, good for them.
Right.
They found this new talent. I mean, that's what it's all about, is like supporting all these new voices and yay.
Yeah. Same with Saoirse Ronan.
Close.
So,
yes.
Saoirse, Saoirse. Honestly.
It's just, it's Saoirse.
Saoirse.
Close. Like S-I-R. Saoirse.
Saoirse.
Yeah.
That. Do you think that that's like her nemesis? Like when people,
her
that
name?
People can't pronounce her name? Or do you think she's just like,
no, she's used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's no, I did a whole bit with her when she was in like one of those YA movies. God, I can't even remember the name of it. She was in one of those movies and we did a whole like, you have to read other people's horrible to read names. She was so good at it. Of
that's
course.
Amazing. That's
of course she was. And so, I think she's so talented. I cannot believe how young she is.
How old is she?
She's like in her early 20s and she's the second youngest. Like she, like Jennifer Lawrence beat her by a few months, but she has like 3 nominations already.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like 23 or 24, I think. So, and so amazing. So Irish. So she's like very unaffected by all this Hollywood stuff. I love people like that.
Love that.
She's great. I really don't think she's going to win this year either. Because I think Frances McDormand is going to take everything because she's really won most of the awards. And her performance, I just don't think there was a better one.
She is killer.
It's just like, I wasn't prepared for 3 billboards. And I just heard every time she spoke, I felt like it was like an explosion.
Yeah.
You know, like she just leveled the place.
Yeah.
And not that she was overplaying it. That's the thing, is that the role was written for her by an incredibly talented writer who Martin McDonagh, who directed the movie. And so it's like, he gets her so deeply and gets her abilities. It was magic to see.
Yeah. You know how earlier you were talking about certain things that you really loved or really hated, and that was like the memorable part?
Yeah.
In that movie, I really loved where she's the priest comes to speak to her, and
oof, ooh,
and then she compares. She brings up like, you know what the LA gangs did? They started go, and she brings up priests and hypocrisy in the Catholic Church and whatever,
sexual abuse.
Yeah, and that was like the one like one of the scenes that I took away, and I was like, oh, you're right. And
that's the thing. She's not the world's greatest person, but she's not wrong either.
Yeah.
And so I find that to be a very difficult and complex way to write a movie or TV show. TV is killing this idea right now of very, very nuanced takes on things that are not entirely wrong, you know. And that's kind of what's great about Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther either also, is that he isn't wrong about the things that he is saying. And so you're very conflicted by the third act, and I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, so I'll stop talking about it. But it's like, it's notable. It's like, oh yeah, wow, that's smart. Yeah. That's smart. That's the writer thinking the audience is smart. I like that.
Yeah. In Three Billboards, there was a lot of parts that I honestly was laughing out loud.
Oh my God. That's the thing about the movie.
Like Dixon's mom, the police officer's mom.
Also, I mean, but yeah, it goes without saying that, yes, we both laughed. And yes, we're both horrible people.
Yes.
But at the same time, you're not any but you're taken to these dizzying emotional highs and lows.
Yeah.
Just within the span of 30 seconds.
The whole movie, it was like sort of like messy. But you know what I mean? But maybe that's like, maybe that was the point of it. You know, like one of my friends was bringing up how he was confused by like the whole police department, like how you're supposed to view that situation. Like they're, Dixon's very racist, and like Woody Harrelson's character is like the good cop sort of, and then I don't know, like he was sort of confused on
complex.
Yeah, but then I almost think like, well, maybe that's the point of it. Like there's a lot of moving parts to everyone, like we were talking about earlier.
Course.
It's just like,
I think that this has been a struggle since the last election for people to understand that you don't have to excuse people's beliefs or behaviors, while at the same time we're still all human beings.
Yeah.
It's like, just because you disagree with someone, you're allowed to disagree, and we're allowed to call that out. And it's not okay that there are Nazis in the streets. I'm comfortable saying that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yes, they are also people. Mm-hmm. What they did is terrible, and we should not allow that. Because it's like, no, that's like pretty much the last refuge of things that you can definitely say you shouldn't do.
Yes.
But I mean, the movie deals with that, I think, surprisingly elegantly.
Yeah, totally. And I also loved when she takes the drill and goes after the dentist, and the police come to her, and her mouth is still numb. And they're like, did you attack the dentist? And her mouth, she has like droopy face, and she's like, no,
that's the
thing. I didn't go there.
She's so funny.
Yeah.
And it's, you feel bad about yourself for laughing a little bit, but it's still so funny. You can't help it. And then you're really sad because it's like, I was in hysterics, and then the scene ends and it cuts to a photo of a charred dead body. Mm. And I'm like, oh. And that's the whole movie. Mm-hmm. It's like that.
That's exactly right. There's so many. And then he ends up in the hospital. Dixon gets burned. He ends up in the hospital with the person he beat up.
Yep.
And he gives him more shoes. Like, yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
But really good.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, this is actually going to post before the Oscars. So I'm excited to watch it. And I don't know. See who wins.
Good. Well, that's one person they've got at least.
No one watches. Seriously, no one watches them. And they just get annoyed because then they think it's like all political.
At least a lot of people. Award season. We could do a whole other show on it. Yeah. But I really enjoy it, even though the more that I see behind the curtain, the less easy it is to be like optimistic and like, I've lost my innocence in some regard.
Yeah.
But I still really like it. I still like the celebration. I like all these people coming together, and I enjoy thinking about my interactions with them and what they've meant to me over the years. And It still gives me a smile.
Yeah, definitely. I want to say on a personal note that I think it's funny that your name is gray, because like if someone was like, oh, describe you as a color, it like wouldn't be gray.
That's true. I just like subverting expectation at every opportunity, I think.
Yes, I love it. All right, let's get you out of here and into the world. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And if you need to find me, I'm at Gray Drake, but you spell my name G-R-A-E.
Yes.
Drake, like the rapper.
At Gray Drake, Twitter, Instagram.
Yep, and then our Rotten Tomatoes YouTube channel, etc.
Yeah, look up the Ryan Gosling kitchen towel.
Oh, and they'll also be on CBS Sunday Morning coming up. That was like an amazing, hard-hitting interview that I participated in.
Can't wait Sunday?
It's March 4th, the day of the Oscars. Oh. Can't wait to see how that turned out. I hope I don't sound like a total idiot.
Who? What's it about?
Rotten Tomatoes. So yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah, cool. Really exciting. I like got my hair done all purdy.
Girl,
I know. So yeah, it's been a really good year. Oh, by the way, happy 20 great teen.
20 great teen.
Yep.
I love that. Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. If you're enjoying the show, tap those 5 stars in the ratings and review section of your podcast app. Next week is a doctor, but not your average general practitioner. She's a sexologist talking all about being single in 2018, online dating, 10-year marriage contracts, pornography, sex robots, you name it. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.